So what I have for you today from the Shvilei Pinchas is an attempt to find an overlap between Shabbos HaGadol and Parshas Metzora. And this is sort of an unusual year in the sense that
Shabbos HaGadol is not Tzav, but it's Metzora.
Right. And usually, you know, we have Tazria Mitzora together. In this case, it's just Mitzora. And let's first start with some background material on what Shabbos HaGadol is and why it's called Shabbos HaGadol. So we have a famous tour in Shulchan Aruch Siman Tov Lamed. And we've seen this in the past, but it's kedai to see it again. He says that there was a great miracle that happened on the Shabbos before Pesach. And that's why we call it Shabbos HaGadol. What was the great miracle? When the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, before they left Mitzrayim, actually on the 10th of Nisan, which overlapped with Shabbos, Hashem told them, v'yikhu ish seh, that each person should take a lamb. And this was on the 10th of the month of Nisan that coincided with Shabbos. And that lamb was going to be slaughtered as a Korban Pesach. And the Torah explains that each family took a seh, they took a lamb, and they would tie it up to the corners of the bed. And when the mitzvah asked, what is this all about? You know, because they worshipped the Tleh. The Tleh was there, because that's in the zodiac, that's the month of Nisan. So the Tleh is considered like the main symbol of the zodiac, and they used to actually consider it like a deity. And when the Jewish people would respond, they would say that we're shechting this for the purpose of a Korban Pesach, because God commanded us to do so. Now at that point, the mitzvah should have pounced upon them according to the laws of nature. You know, how can you take our God and slaughter it? For hayu shinem chaos, and their teeth were sort of shaking. You know, they couldn't tolerate this. But on the other hand, God did a miracle, and they weren't able to say a word. So that was the great miracle that took place on the Shabbos before Pesach. Hence, in commemoration of that great miracle, we have what's called Shabbos HaGadol. So that's the great miracle of the Shabbos right before Pesach. Now again, the Mefarshim tried to understand why do they give the name to the Shabbos? Why is it called Shabbos HaGadol? And there's a famous insight of the Chiddush HaRim. The Chiddush HaRim was one of the great Hasidic masters. He was the master of the Hasidus called Ger, the Ger HaChasidim. And he writes that the word Gadol here is a reference to Avraham Avinu. And why is that so? Because if you open up to Tanakh, you'll see in Sefer Yoshua, it says, V'shem Chevron Lifnim Kiryas Arba Ha'adam HaGadol Banakimhu. And this pasuk, according to the Medrash, that says Ha'adam HaGadol, the great man, is Gadol Banakim. He's the giant amongst giants. And that's a reference to Avraham Avinu. Now, what's the connection between this Shabbos and Avraham Avinu? And the answer is that Avraham Avinu dedicated his whole life to one, shall we say, one goal, or one agenda. What was Avraham Avinu's agenda? It was to have a child, and to raise that child to be the heir, to be the continuation of the legacy of the service of Hashem. And as you know, back in the time of Avraham Avinu, they didn't have the Torah, but Avraham Avinu was dedicated to serve Hashem through Torah and mitzvos, even before they were given. And he wanted to pass that tradition on to his children. So now, we have the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. And that becomes the first mitzvah in the Torah, and the first mitzvah which the Jewish people are commanded to fulfill as a nation. And this is a critical moment in history in which all the desires and the dreams of Avraham Avinu are coming to fruition. That now on this day of the Korban Pesach, the people of Israel as a nation, as they're about to be redeemed from the exile of Mitzrayim, they take the Korban Pesach And that's their first mitzvah. This is when the nation of Israel emerges as the nation of mitzvahs. And therefore Avraham Avinu is very, very excited about this. In other words, Avraham Avinu's, you know, his future, his dream, his goal in life was to see that from him would come about this great nation that would be dedicated to Torah mitzvahs. And therefore we call it Shabbos HaGadol, meaning it's the Shabbos of the Adam HaGadol. And who is the Adam HaGadol? Avraham Avinu. And why is, how do we identify, and why do we identify Avraham Avinu as Adam HaGadol? That's based on the Torah Shebaal Peh, interpreting the Torah Shebichsav, in this case, a pasuk in Yoshua. And Yoshua calls the name of this place called Kiryat Arba, which is Chevron. That's where Avraham Avinu purchased a plot of land as a burial plot. And who was it? It was the Adam HaGadol Ba'anokim, the great giant amongst giants. And that's Avraham Avinu. So since Avraham Avinu is called Adam HaGadol, and this is the Shabbos that Avraham Avinu reaches, in a sense, an implementation or a realization of his great dream, this is the Shabbos HaGadol of the Adam HaGadol. Fine, so that's just a general introduction to Shabbos HaGadol. But this year, Shabbos HaGadol coincides with the parasha of Mitzora. Now, what we're going to try to understand is, we spoke last week, I don't know if you remember, about the Negoim, the various types of Negoim, the categories. You know, some Negoim affect the skin, the body of a person. Other Negoim affect the clothes that a person wears. And then you have the Negoim that affect the house that a person lives in. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just reminding you. And in terms of Batim, for example, the Torah says, and that's going to be one of the first few psukim that we read this Shabbos. It says, "Ki tavo el eretz Knan." You'll see this on the bottom right. "Asher anino sein lachem lachuza." So God is saying, "You'll come into the land which I'm giving you as your possession, for your possession." "V'nasati nega tzaras babayis." I'm going to bring an affliction into the house itself. "Be eretz achuzaschem," in the land that you will inherit.
Wow.
Now, the laws of Nigei Batim, the requirements, are very, very manifold and very minute. In other words, the conditions that have to come to fruition in order for the house to be declared as Tomei B'Nigei Batim are literally impossible. You know, to have all the conditions that you have to, that all, they all have to coincide? No, that's not the word I'm looking for. They all have to
convene.
Overlap. Maybe we'll use that word. To overlap all those conditions and find one house that
would be synchronous, in fact.
To synchronize? Is that what you say, synchronize? Okay. So the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin something that we're familiar with about Ben Sora Mora, because Ben Sora Mora, the conditions are just so manifold, it's almost impossible. So the Gemara uses the same language with regard to Beis HaMenuga, a house that's afflicted. And the Gemara says, Beis HaMenuga lo hoya v'lo asid lios. The entire entity of Beis HaMenuga is purely theoretical. V'lo menichtav, why did the Torah give us this parasha? Drosh v'kabel schar. Drosh v'kabel schar means that there's some hidden message. There's a deeper meaning in the parasha, and we're meant to derive the deeper meaning of the parasha. But the reality is too difficult. There's so many different conditions that have to be met that it is only drosh v'kabel schar. It's not lo hayav lo asid lios. Like we said about Ben Tzomora, lo hayav lo nivra. You know, it will never come to fruition. So what we want to do is we want to fulfill the dictum of the Gemara in Sanhedrin called Drosh V'Kabel Schar. We want to darshan the parsha of Negat Zaraz, and we want to understand that parsha, and specifically as it overlaps with Shabbos HaGadol. So we're going to start with Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. This is already in the middle column on page 1. The Medrash says the following: V'nasati Negat Zaraz. God says, I will bring a Negat Zaraz. Besorah Hilahem. This is good news for the Jewish people. Shanagoyim boim aleihem. Well, now, that this sounds counterintuitive. What's such great news about Negoyim, about Tumah? The answer is Lefishet Minu Amorim, Amorim, right? There were many different nations, seven different nations that occupied the land. These were the Palestinians of that time. And no political comment intended. You know, there's a whole issue going on in New York City. Is Palestine a nation or not? You familiar with this? There's a Jewish, a religious Jew who's a representative of government, and he made a statement that Palestine is not a nation. He meant to say that there's no such state on the map called the state of Palestine. And he got in deep trouble for this. The mayor of New York City, yeah, man, New York City is a big city. It's got 8 million people. The mayor of New York City wants to put this guy into cherem for making that statement. But he misunderstood the statement. He wasn't saying anything about the Palestinian people. He was saying that they don't have a state. They don't have a recognized state in the international community. Anyway, but getting back to this, we have this Amorim, right? The Amorites. These Amorites occupied the land of Israel, and what they did was they hid in the structure of their buildings. You know, the buildings were made of stone. Yeah. And there were ways of finding little cracks and crevices in the stone or underneath stones. And what did they hide there? They hid there their very precious possessions, like gold and the other kinds of precious materials. Now, the Jewish people, during this period of time, were in the Midbar. They had just left Egypt. They were 40 years in the Midbar. And during that 40-year period, the Amorim would hide their gold inside the cracks and crevices of the buildings, of the structures that they had built for themselves in the land of Israel, in Eretz Achuzaschem. But there was no way of finding that. So when the Jewish people came in, you know, when Josh got the barrel of Jericho, right, and they conquered the land, so then they settled in the land, and these homes, these houses, were still structured. But although they couldn't know and guess exactly where and which houses might have some very precious materials hidden in them, but what happened is that Hashem gave them, the people of Israel, the mitzvah, Be'eretz Achuzaschem, of Negatzaras, of Negebatim. Now, if you happen to recall, we're going to read it this Shabbos, that what happens to a bias that's declared afflicted with this tumah of Negebatim, we have to do netitza. Netitza means we have to break it apart.
Demolition.
Excellent. Demolition. I love when you give me a word because I'm driving myself crazy finding words. I'm telling you, I guess it's a function of age. I don't know, but demolition. Great word. Demolition. Okay, and we need, of course, the Israeli Supreme Court to give us the license for demolition. Okay, that's complicated, right? You know, we're all in favor of demolition, but kill the murderers. Anyway, so what happens when they implement this netitza? Then all of a sudden things get exposed, right? All of a sudden you find the gold that was hidden. So Reb Shimon bar Yochai says that the parsha of Negetzaras is a besorah. It's a good piece of news for the Jewish people, because now they're going to be able to discover these matmonim. Now all this is fine until we open up the Gemara and Sanhedrin. The Gemara says that how many times in Jewish history do we have a Negetzaras and a bias?
Zero.
So the whole parsha of Mesa Benuga is Lo Hoy V'Lo Osid Lios. So then, what is the Torah telling us here, according to Rav Shimon bar Yochai, that we have a great, great news? The boon is that we're going to be able to discover all these hidden treasures. Well, that's only if you assume that the mitzvah of netitzah is going to be implemented. But now the Chazal told us that they won't be able to implement them. So how are we going to get these expensive pieces of gold? So here we have to introduce another principle. I'm just going to make a bracha. Shakolim. What is this next principle that we want to introduce? This is a famous, famous statement in the Gemara Menachos. We all know this. Today, after the Churban Abayis, we don't have the ability to bring a karbon. Now, let's say a person sinned, and it was not deliberate, it was unintentional, and it was a chiyuv karbon. He has to bring a karbon chatos. And now, today, there's no Beis HaMikdash, we can't bring a Korban Chata. So the Gemara Menachos offers us a solution. And what's the replacement for a Korban Chatos? Kol Osek B'Torah Chatos. Anyone who learns, I mean, we have some people who learn Daf Yomi, so they finish Masechta Menachos. Now they're learning Chulin. There's a lot of Kochim in Chulin too, although it's more Taras than Kochim. And the Gemara tells the Menachos that if you study the laws of the Chatos, then Ke'ilu Hikriv Chatos. Or if you learn the laws of Asham, the Torah of a Korban Asham, it's Ke'ilu Hikriv Korban Asham. So it means if a person learns a piece of Torah, and that piece of Torah is theoretical because it's not practical, you know, as we cannot implement Chatos today or Asham today, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. Let's apply that principle to the case of Nigei Batim. What do we have today? We don't have Nigei Batim. We don't, and not only that, even at the time that the Torah was written, we didn't have Nigei Batim. There was no Tachlis, there was no Nigei Batim. It's only Asid, it's Eino Asid Leos even. So the answer is that we can achieve Nigei Batim by learning the Torah of Nigei Batim. And therefore, if the Amorim really hid these precious jewels or metals in the walls in the Kosle Abayis, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be Mesavev Sivuvim. He'll be the great cause of causes, and he'll make sure that will be that X. I'm going to get back to X in this. X will be able to reveal the gold of the Amorim, and who's that X? That's he who studies the laws of Negayim. Why? Because if he studies the laws of Negayim and he learns about the mitzvah of Netitza, then it's as if the bias was completely broken up, and the Torah is considered as if you fulfill the mitzvah, and then you're going to be able to find the gold. So again, we're going to find the gold of the Amorim because the Torah gave us the parasha of Nigei Batim. Not because we're going to implement that parasha, we're going to break down the house, but because it's as if we've implemented the parasha. And that's based on the principle of learning the laws. And therefore, when the Gemara says in Masechta Sanhedrin that what do we do with the parasha of Nigei Batim, drosh v'kabel schar, the drosh means to learn the parasha of Nigei Batim, to get a deeper understanding of what it's all about. And as a result of that drosh, Kabul Schar, God will reveal for you those hidden jewels, those hidden expensive treasures between the walls, you know, in the cracks in the walls of the bias, as if the bias was completely destroyed. So you'll be able to find those gold pieces without having to destroy the bias. But again, that's only conditional on learning. That's called drosh v'kabul schar. And now we can add one other point here. Rav Shimon ben Elazar in the Gemara Kedushin says, "Ra'isa miyamecha chaya v'yov sheyesh lahem umnus ve'imis parnasim below tzar." It's very interesting. Rav Shimon ben Elazar has a kasha. What's his question? He finds some sort of a contradiction in nature. He looks at the natural world of animals and birds, and it turns out that they have an umnus, meaning their job, so to speak, in life is to seek out food. Right? That's what an animal has to do. Seek out food. A bird has to seek out food. We see it here, right? You take a look at the cats here in Katamon, right? And they're always seeking out food. Or you take a look at those crows, you know, those big black, right? And they're always looking for food. So that's the umnus, that's the job, so to speak, that's the workload of the chaya and the oaf. And even though the oaf has to fly around to look for food, it doesn't look for food as far as Manchester. That far you don't have to go. And yet, hey, misparnasim below tsar. The pella is that God created a world in which the animals and the birds can find what they need to sustain themselves, and they don't have to agonize over it. Now I don't know what Rav Shimon means over here. Does every single animal and every bird live in a, you know, in calm? I guess there's no such thing as psychiatrists for animals and birds. I guess they, you know, you and I have to see a psychiatrist because we're not getting paid and we don't have money to put on the table. So he says the following: why were the animals and the birds created in the divine plan? And again, only Rav Shimon, as a giant in Torah, could reveal this secret. The divine plan was that they would serve us. They would serve us. In other words, man is at the top of the totem pole. And the birds, the animals, everybody, all the creatures were there to make a world for us. So that they could serve us. And we use them for work, we use them for food, we use them for karbanos. They are considered mishamshim, they are the mishamshim of man. Now man himself, he's the ultimate mishamish. He's the servant of?
Hashem.
Of God, correct. Of the Maker. So now let's apply the logic of a Kal Vachomer. If the animals who are subservient to man, and they only have a shemesh to man, and yet they get parnosa without tsar, so then why is it that man, who's on a higher level, like the animals are serving him, and he, man, is serving God, he should also have parnosa without tsar? For sure he should be granted sustenance without having to sweat and toil with all the anguish that's involved. Hello, but the answer is Shehu Reisi Masai Vikipachti Esparnasasi. Now look at that word Horesi. Do you know which two letters are the root of the word Horesi?
Reish Ayin.
Excellent. Reish Ayin. Wonderful. I see you're very advanced. I see, Gershon. I didn't know how advanced you were. Okay.
I didn't either, Rabbi.
What?
I didn't either.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. I always have this discussion with Rabbi Myers about his class, whether they're advanced or they're basic. You know, we have this ongoing dialogue here. Anyway, so Horesi comes to the word Ra. But when you take the word Ra as a noun, which refers to evil, and you turn it into a causative action, it becomes, in Lashon Hispa, it becomes Horesi. Horesi means I made my actions evil. V'kipachti, and as a result, I gave up on my parnasa. In other words, man in his natural state, let's say Adam v'Chava, when they were created, they had no problem, there was no anguish and tension about getting a parnasa. Why? There was plenty out there. Again, why they ate from that one tree, I don't know. I wish they hadn't done that, but I can't change history right now. And kipachti es parnasasi. So man is guilty of sin, and that undermines the whole system. The original system was made with this Kal Vachomer, that if the animals could enjoy their sustenance without any tsar, how much more so man should be sustained without any tsar? Right? Could you imagine a world in which we didn't have anguish over our, it would change everything. Again, there are some rich people, I guess, out there who don't eat. Although they say the more money you have, the more anguish you have, the more tension you have. Is that true?
I don't know.
I don't know. You're not in that position to tell me, but you may know some rich people. So if you know any rich people, find out if they also have nervous tension. But certainly when you go down the podium, you know, totem pole, you're talking about people. Okay, today it's very cool. Why? Because they have retirement plans, and they have Social Security, and they have pensions.
Canada pensions.
Pensions. Yeah. Well, what do they have in South Africa? Do they have any sort of pensions? They do. What do they call them? Retirement pensions. Yeah. So what is that? Rands?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! I don't know. I would still be tense even after the retirement plans. I don't know. Mm. Well, the Canadian dollar is doing a drop better, but it's also, when I was there, it was par, but now it's, I don't know, it's about 55-60%, I don't know what it is.
75.
Oh, it's up to 75.
75 cents US.
So maybe I should still hold on to my Canadian dollars. Maybe it's on its way up.
Still a discount.
Yeah. I bought this in Canada 10 years ago for 75 bucks, Canadian bucks. And yesterday, or the day before yesterday, it fell on the floor. So I can't see anything here. So if anybody knows how to fix it, let me know. But anyway, so we have here a situation in which man could have lived on an idyllic kind of Shangri-La kind of existence, if not for sin, and he would have no tension whatsoever to have parnasa. Okay. So now let's go back to the mission in Avos, and this is going to put a spin on this whole concept of Horesi Masai V'Kipachti Es Parnasasi. The Mishnah says the following. Do you and I know, because we have to learn the Mishnah, that we create malachim. We create angels. Are those good angels or prosecuting angels? Well, that's what freedom of choice is all about. If we do a mitzvah, then we get what's called a praklit. That's a defense attorney angel. Those are the good guys. They're in white. But if we do an avera, then we produce what's called a kategar, a prosecuting angel. And that's in black, so to speak. Wow. You know, if you remember Mad Magazine, okay, that's American culture. Anyway, there was always the spy in white and the spy in black. Okay. You never even heard of Mad Magazine.
I confess.
Yes, I remember Mad Magazine. You know, this was in Brooklyn, New York. You know, we were raised on Mad Magazine. Right?
What, New York?
Alfred Neumann. Oh, man. My favorite one was, they had a column where they made fun of colloquialisms, you know, of idiomatic phrases. So they have this phrase, I don't know if you ever heard the phrase, have an accident? So they show you a man who's underneath a car, and somebody comes by and says, have an accident? He says, no thanks, I already had one. You know what I'm saying? And this was Mad Magazine. It was very clever. So he says in the name of the Bar Tanura, this is on the top of your left column, that the praklit that we create as a result of a maisa mitzvah is called a malach melitz tov. Melitz means when he defends us. He puts forward a claim on our behalf that we should be exonerated and that we should get reward. You know, I was always wondering why you're allowed to do mitzvahs on Shabbos, because you're not allowed to create new things on Shabbos. Anyway, then there's something called a kategar, and he's the melitz ra. He's going to say bad things about us. Why? Because we did evil. So when you think about it, if we lived in a world that was full of praklitim and all we did was mitzvahs, then Hashem is promising us a parnasa. Just like the animals have their parnasa, the human beings should likewise have a parnasa. And we have guaranteed support, even without the retirement plans. But the problem is that when we get involved in evil acts, heaven forbid, then what happens is that we create these kategor malachim. Now, once we create the kategor malachim that are speaking evil against us, so now we can't find our parnasa. We don't know where to find the source of our parnasa. So we look here, we look there, and that's called kipachti es parnasasi. So in every generation, we will have to find these amoroyim, right? These people from Amori. And they represent the koch atuma. They have the power of evil. And what do? They hide things. And what does it mean that they hide things? Machbiyim in adam otso shel zav. There are treasures of gold that belong to this Amori guy, and he hides it in the walls of his house because he doesn't want the Jews to find their parnasa. He doesn't want them to get an easy parnas. He wants them, if they're coming into the land and they're conquering the land, let them suffer. You know, it's like Tomus Nafshi and Plishtim. You know, I don't want anyone to take my gold. And therefore, if the Jews don't find this gold, then it's kipachti es parnasasi. They don't have parnasa. So what's the answer to this problem? What's the counsel? Drosh v'kabel schar. Learn up the laws of nigei batin. And as a result, you'll do tshuva, because nigei batim is all a result of various sins that a person does privately in his home. And now he has to realize that the message is sent to him clearly that he has to do tshuva. And if he does tshuva and he learns the laws of nigei batim, God is going to consider it as if he actually experienced the entire mitzvah of batim with the netitza, and therefore Hashem says, now you're on the right path. You're on the drosh of learning Torah, is kabel schar. Now you're going to receive your reward. And your reward is going to guarantee your parnasa without any anguish, because you're going to be able to find all these hidden treasures that go back to the period of the Amorim. Now all this is meant to shed a light on Shabbos HaGadol, so we'll get to that. You may already be anticipating what's behind, you know, what's around the bend. But he says the following. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is very difficult. We said that Beis HaMenuga never was and never will be. So what is the message that we are meant to take from this parasha? Again, we can learn the parasha with all its minute detail and all the halachic conditions, But it's got to have a, it's got to penetrate into our souls, into our hearts. What is the message that is meant to be transferred or transmitted to our hearts in the, by learning the parasha of Nigei Bati? Question number two, and this you'll see on the left column towards the bottom. He says the second question is, why did God command us in this mitzvah of Nigei Batim only in Eretz Yisrael? Why not in Chutz Arts as well? And third question is, what does Rav Shimon bar Yochai mean when he says that the ultimate purpose of Nigei Batim is to reveal these treasures? What are these treasures on a symbolic level? Because again, you know, at some point in Jewish history, we're no longer going to find these treasures. And when the Torah says for all eternity that I'm giving you this parsha in order that you should be revealing the secret treasures that are hidden therein in these houses, well, what are those hidden treasures? And then that might be good for the first generation of Jews who came in with Yahushua to conquer the land. But over the course of Jewish history, what do these treasures represent? So in order to understand this, we're going to try to go back to the parsha of the Meraglim. Who are the Meraglim? They were the princes of Israel. They were chosen because they were the unique leaders of the Bali Mila. They were on the highest level. What caused them to veer off the path, to deviate from the will of God, and to sin with one of the most hideous sins in Jewish history? And the answer is often here on the flip side of your page, that's page 2, by the Igra de Kala, who's also the author of the Bnei Yisaskar. And he tries to explain this parasha of the Meraglim based on the parasha of Balak and Bilam. Balak and Bilam personify what we call the Kochos HaTumah, those powers that contradict or undermine Knesset Yisrael. What they want to accomplish, Balak and Bilam, is to prevent the people of Israel from removing what we call in Hasidus the Tzotzos of Kedusha. I'll translate that literally, but it's more of a mystical concept that everything that's evil has to exist, in order for it to exist, has to have some connection to sanctity. And that, right, that sanctity, that's called a nitzotz. Nitzotz means it's a spark. There's a spark of sanctity even within in everything that's evil, except for Amalek. Again, Amalek is a different category, but leaving out Amalek for a moment. Again, we don't know who Amalek is today. We're not sure. I mean, because after Sanherib, who he sent people all over the place. But whoever the Amalekis is, this paragraph that we're about to learn has no bearing on Amalekim. But let's talk about other nations of the world, you know, non-Jewish people who are not Amalekim. And with regard to those nations, we have something called the Tzotzo Shel Kedusha. Trapped within them, and within that area, within that geographic location, and also in their souls, there are these sparks of sanctity. Now, whenever the Jewish people enter into exile, their ultimate goal and their challenge is to see if they can penetrate into the and arrive and reveal these nitzotzos of Kedusha, of sanctity. And that is what's called Meleches Borer. You know that in the 39 Melechus, one of them is Borer. I think it's called selecting in English. Is that, if you have a better word, let me know. And what it is that the Jewish people are involved in a selection process. They have to decide what's evil and cast that aside. Just don't get involved, don't get influenced by the evil. And find the nitzotzos, discover them, and then when let's say Hashem brings about a geula, a redemption, so let the umos ha'olam, these enemies of the Jewish people, let them remain as dead people, and let that nation be wiped off the face of the earth. But the Jewish people have to take out of golus, what they have to free, so to speak, that's trapped in the golus of that nation, is these nitzotzos of Kedusha. So for example, in the case of Mitzrayim is an evil nation that perpetrates tremendous evil against the Jewish people. Now the Jewish people are redeemed from Mitzrayim. On their way out, they have to take with them nitzotzos. These are the sparks of sanctity that somehow were trapped in the klipa and the tumah of Mitzrayim. And then What happens is that these kochos of tuma, these contaminating and evil beings. Now, when I say beings, you know, it's very fascinating that in the Kabbalistic writings, the forces of evil are living beings, meaning they want to continue to exist. They have a divine mission, and they want to continue to exist. Now there's a great fear, because those kochos of tuma, as long as the Jews were in exile, were very comfortable. They were not vulnerable. But at what point do they become exposed to destruction? At the moment that the Jewish people are leaving, they're being redeemed, and they're what's the opposite of exile in English? Exodus, maybe we'll call it. Can I use that word? Anyway, at the point of Exodus, Klal Yisrael are now threatening to take with them those nitzotzos of Kedusha. And that means the total demise and destruction of all the kochos of tuma. And if we say that the kochos of tuma, we can attribute to them an existing being that wants to continue to exist. Now all of a sudden, fear on the crowd, right? Because now all these klipos, these kochos of tuma, are in a state of fear. Why? Because what gives them life, what sustains them, you know, the oxygen is the connection to kedusha, to sanctity. Now the Jews are going to take with them on their way out whatever sanctity, whatever shirayim of sanctity is left in that country where they were in Golos. Is therefore us. This is in the second paragraph on page 2. At the end of the paragraph, it says Azai. What happens is that in the case, for example, of Bilam, right? Bilam represents one of those kochos of tuma, one of those klipos. He's afraid that the klipa is afraid of pen yiluk achiyusa. Mishkas ha-nitzot sahu mi'od mo betoch amke tumas ha-klipos kidei k'mo sha'odam matmin otzar nechmad machbuos lebal yishletu bozorin. Okay, now this is all mystical, what they call today in the academic world, Lurianic Kabbalah. And according to Lurianic Kabbalah of the Ari, what happens is that these kochos hatum are fighting for dear life. So what they do is they hide their kedusha deep, deep down below the surface. They want to make sure that the Jewish people will not be able to remove these nitzotzos of kedusha, because that would mean their total destruction. So therefore, when it says "Vayikatz Moav mipnei bnei Yisrael," that Moav was totally repulsed by the people of Israel, he says "Vayikatz miloshem kotzim usyag shaosim gader lekerem." When you build a fence around a vineyard, then you build it out of kotzim. Kotzim are certain thorns, and that's in Hebrew called a kotz. And "Vayikatz" means that they made kotzim to protect, like as a fence, around siag mitumas klipas moav saviv la nitzotz, around the nitzotz. Again, the nitzotz, if you remember, is that spark of kedusha. And when it says vayikatz moav, meaning moav set up these fences around the nitzotzos, it says mipnei bnei Yisrael, because of the fear of the people of Israel. In other words, the fear is that the people of Israel are going to be able to free these sparks of Kedusha, even despite the fact that they're very deeply hidden under the ground. Oh. Now let's go back to the parasha of the Meraglim. The Meraglim knew that this whole endeavor, this whole enterprise of Eretz Yisrael was all about Kedusha, was all about sanctity, that there was something inherent in the land of Israel that was very unique, that was very sanctified. But they had a problem, because they came into the land, and guess what? Did they feel the Kedusha? You know, sometimes you enter into a synagogue, or into a house of study, or into the private home of a great giant in Torah, and you feel an awe, an aura of sanctity. The Meraglim anticipated that, you know, this land that we've been speaking so much about, and now we're on this on a scouting mission, we should immediately feel the Kedusha. Right? Why don't I feel the Kedusha? And therefore they came to the mistaken conclusion that perhaps the tuma element, the negative element of these seven nations that occupy the land, is so powerful and so intense that Achin is Gabriel Kedusha, they completely vitiated any sanctity. The Girshu Misham is called Nitzotzea Kedusha. These enemies of sanctity, which are so powerful, have rejected and repelled any spark of Kedusha. So what's left? There's no Kedusha left. If there's no Kedusha because of the Tumah of these seven nations, then why are we going to Eretz Yisrael? It's completely, there's a complete vacuum as far as sanctity, a complete vacuum. And this is the Lashon Hara that they brought back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And they said, Efes ki az ha'am ha'yoshe v'aretz. We're not talking about physical power. We're talking about the Tumah power. The Tumah power is so great that the Kedusha is completely gone. There is no Kedusha in the land. We didn't feel any Kedusha. And therefore, why are we going into the land of Israel? Ha'arim b'tzuras gedola ma'od, gam yalidei ha'anakra inusham. So their major fatal mistake was thinking that, you know, Kochos HaTumah could completely destroy Kedusha to the point to which the land of Israel has been completely divested of any ebb of Kedusha that's left. And what they didn't realize is that because of the fear of the people of Israel, the Kochos HaTumah redoubled their efforts, and they were able to take the Kedusha, the Nitzotzei Kedusha, and they could hide it. And where would they hide it? They would hide it in the Kiros Beisam, in the very walls of their home. And this is all because they're afraid of the people of Israel, that the people would take out their, you know, would remove their Kedusha, their Nitzotzos, their spots of Kedusha, which is their claim to existence, and their, what we call, Otzros, you know, their beautiful Otzros. And if that be the case, when Moshe Rabbeinu tells the people of Israel, tells the Meraglim, he mandates them, V'schazaktem v'lakachtem mipri ha'aretz, v'yamim yamei bikuri ha'novim. He says that I want to tell you something. These are the days in which the grapes will first appear on the vine. Why did he have to tell them that? Why was that so significant? But the answer is, he's alluding to them that they should take a lekach, they should learn something from the grapes. The grapes themselves can produce very quality, high quality wine, yayin tov gonus. But this wine might be in hiding. You know, it's not necessarily revealed. That's called ganus. V'shamur l'betocha novin. This is really interesting that he's saying that the goodness, you know, the kedusha, so to speak, within the grapes are hidden deep down below the surface. Ve'nenira klapei chutz. And what it means is that, you know, you shouldn't judge Eretz Yisrael by the cover, so to speak, by the outside. You know, the outside revelation, what's revealed. You should look deeper below the surface and see if you can reveal something that's concealed. And therefore, v'schazaktem v'lakachtem mipri ha'aretz. It means that if you don't find any kedusha, you don't discover in the very atmosphere of the land of Israel sanctity, then you need v'schazaktem, you need chizuk. What is chizuk, my friends? For us, chizuk means the study of Torah. And I can't overemphasize this. We have to dedicate ourselves to the study of Torah. And therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Meraglim, V'ayomim yamei bikuri anovim, Moshe needs to tell them that learn something from the peros of the land, from the grapes in this case, that Yayin Tov, that there's a great treasure here in the grapes, but it's not exposed, it's inherent in the grapes. It's Ganuz Betocha. It's hidden inside this fruit. And Eretz Yisrael has what's called a Kedusha Genuza. Just like the grapes have a certain tov that's hidden, because you look at the grape on the outside, you just see it's covering, it's klipa, but that klipa is hiding something that's really excellent. And we can say that now because, you know, the grapes have come back into season. Have you seen it? Oh, they're wonderful. We had some grapes yesterday that were outstanding. Eretz Zavas Cholav Udvash. I mean, this is the Eretz Yisrael. So he says the following, that just like the grapes, when you look at them on the outside, all you see is the covering, the skin. You don't see, because you can't see below the surface and penetrate and see the wonderful wine that's inside the grapes. Well, for those who don't like wine, grape juice, right? He says that's a mashal for Eretz Yisrael. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was sending them, a subtle message, you know, a hidden message here. There was like a coded message here. When he told them that this is the time of Anovim, of the grapes, he was telling them that our entire enterprise of coming to Eretz Yisrael to try to find out what is unique about the land, namely, how is it sanctified? We can only find that and discover that if we first acknowledge and realize that this Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is Genuza. Genuza means it's hidden. B'toch ha'otzo shel ha'morim she'hevbiu es Yisrael. What does that mean? Hevbiu es ha'kedusha, excuse me. In other words, that the Amorim are able to hide the Kedusha, just like the outside covering of a grape hides the good juicy part of the grape, so too the outside covering of the Tumas HaAmorim is going to hide and conceal the Kedusha that's within it. So don't judge a book by its cover, by its klipa. Look below the surface. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to instruct the Meraglim. Only two of them got the message. The rest of them just looked at Eretz Yisrael on the chitzonius, on its outer appearance, and they thought it was completely devoid of Kedusha. Now we can shed a whole new light on the Gemara that we started with, the Medrash that we started with, that through the Parsha of Nigei Batim, we discover the gold that was hidden by the Amorim. You know what that gold is referring to? Because we ask the question, how is this a message for all generations? I mean, we don't have the ability to get access to the gold that's in the
Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael.
Excellent. It's the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. That what they was... And now... I want to add one point. I'm surprised it's not here. But anyway, the pasuk says at the beginning of Bereishit, it says Uzahav ha'aretz ahi tov, that the gold of the land is good. And Chazal say that that's referring to the gold of Eretz Yisrael. What is the gold of Eretz Yisrel? The Torah of Eretz Yisrael. The Ein Torah Ketoras Eretz Yisrael. So the word Zahav, gold, means a lot of different things in a lot of different contexts. It's one of those heavy words, you know, that's full of codes and secrets. In this case, when we're saying that the Amorim were hiding their zav, their gold, in the wall, in the cracks and crevices of their walls, of their homes, what we're talking about is not zahav literally, you know, the metal substance which is called gold, but rather we're talking about the kedusha, the zahav. We have to set up an equation here. I'm going to write it down on the bottom of my page. Zahav equals Kedusha. Like the gold is a symbolic illusion representing Kedusha. So when it says that the Mamorim are hiding their gold, what they're trying to do is hide their Kedusha, because they're afraid that Klal Yisrael is going to conquer the land, remove all the Kedusha, and all the Kochos HaTumah are going to completely dissipate. They'll be self-destructed, so to speak, because what keeps them alive is the chius of Kedusha. But now Klal Yisrael taking out, they're cutting out the Kedusha. So that means that the that the tumah is pure tumah without any element of kedusha, that can't exist. Lachain, and therefore, mevi Hakadosh Baruch Hu negoyim umakos al kiros bateim laharos es mivtzerei kochos hatumah. So now he's explaining it on a literal level, that we have tumas negoyim, we have all sorts of blemishes in the walls, we're going to have to take apart the walls, and we're going to be able to discover where are the zahav of the amorim. But now the word zahav means what? Means kedusha. And therefore, once we are granted the parsha of nigei batim, and we fulfill that parsha, then we'll be able to reveal those sparks of kedusha that were hidden in the homes of the amorim, and then Klal Yisrael will be inspired by this kedusha. And in Mela, we can begin to understand, perhaps, why this parsha is given in Eretz Yisrael, and only in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, you don't look for Nigei Batim in Chutz Lawrence. And the opening words of the parsha of Nigei Batim, Ki Tavo El Eretz Knan, Asher Nino Sein Lachem Liachu Zah, V'nasati Neged Tzaras B'bayis. So the opening words are Ki Tavo El Eretz. We see that the entire issue of Negoim and Tzora is all in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because Eretz Yisrael is invested with what? With Kedusha. And just like we saw in the case of the Meraglim, that the Amorim were able to successfully trick the Meraglim and have them mistakenly believe that there's no Kedusha because they're hiding the Kedusha, and now they're hiding the Zav, is then we begin to understand the parsha of Nigei Batim is limited to Eretz Yisrael, because in Eretz Yisrael that's where we have the Amorim who are hiding the Nitzotzos of Kedusha in those Otsro Shel Zav, and we have to redeem those Nitzotzos Shel Kedusha. That's our job, our responsibility, and that's going to take place where? In Eretz Achuzaschem. It's only in the land of Israel, because the land of Israel is suffused with Kedusha, and the Meraglim who come to the land of Israel and they expect to feel Kedusha, and they don't feel Kedusha because the Kedusha is in the Zav that was hidden by the Amorim, and the Zav is the Kedusha, and now Klal Yisrael doesn't see the Kedusha. The Meraglim don't feel the Kedusha. They've been fooled, they've been duped into thinking that the Kedusha was completely nullified. But heaven forbid to say such a thing. The Kedusha is very much alive and well, and it's very much real. And even though you don't see it, you know, at first glance, but it's the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. I don't know, does anyone here agree that when they get off the plane here, you feel some sort of... Do you sense that? Not always. Okay. All right, we're not yet ready for the Zav. You know, maybe we're not dedicated enough. But I know, and I feel a little badly that I have to go to Chutz Lartz, you know, for Pesach. You know, I haven't been in Chutz Lartz for Pesach in decades upon decades. So I'm not excited about it. But I mean, we have to do what we have to do. But, you know, when I get off the plane in New York City, it's like... Besides the fact that it's like getting, you know, it's like stepping into the United Nations. I mean, you know, you're waiting online. Okay, I get off an LL plane, so I hang around with some Israelis. But, you know, as soon as you get towards the head of the line and they stamp your passport, you know, you'll see all sorts of turbans. And, you know, it's like standing, I don't know if, you know, in London there's a place called Harrods. Have you ever heard of it? So if you ever stand outside Harrods because your wife is inside and you don't have the kirkus for her, so you stand outside and you feel like you're in the United Nations, you know. And that's it gives me a sense of, you know, I'm lacking that exposure to Kedusha. Here I feel, you know, to some extent I'm surrounded by Kedusha. By the way, the picture changes totally as soon as you enter into a Beis Medrash or a Beis HaKnesses. Then you feel like you're back in Eretz Yisrael. It's an amazing feeling. And the shul that I daven in when I'm on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, in order to get there I have to pass a church. So I try to cross the street, but if I don't cross the street, sometimes the doors of the church are open.
Yeah.
And like you feel like some sort of air is coming out of the church. You know, mm-hmm. So you just want to quickly get yourself over to the synagogue. It's called the Bialystok Shul. It became a landmark. in New York City, which means that legally they're never allowed to change, you know, the synagogue, because it became a landmark. Anyway, so he says the following: Hitminu Amorim Metmunios Shelzav Bekiros Patenim. So now they're taking the nitzotzos of Kedusha and they're hiding it inside their walls. Kedesha yuchlu lekabel chiusu mazal min nitzotze Kedusha, because these tumah beings, you know, these little goblets of tumah, you know, they're trying to desperately keep alive because they must have a connection to Kedusha. That's why Samael, who's the essence of Kedusha, has two letters at the end, which is God's name. Because if he doesn't continue connecting to God, he's totally lost. And he'll disintegrate. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings Negayim and Makos on the Kiros Bateyim, so that we'll have to destroy the, you know, these homes that are Mivtzarim, you know, they're protecting the Nitzotzes of Kedusha, and then we'll be able to expose that Kedusha and replace it. And therefore, when we enter into the land of Israel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us a hint that we have to feel the Kedusha. And if we don't feel the Kedusha, we got to work very hard to reveal the Kedusha. A lot of people come to Israel and they say, oh, you know, it's a land like any other land. They don't realize that it's their responsibility to try to reveal the Nitzotzos of Kedusha. And therefore he says, we have to read this parasha of Nigei Batim, which is going to transmit into our hearts, and we have to open up our hearts to allow this message to penetrate, that Eretz Yisrael is the land of Kedusha. And we have to work hard to make sure that we can reveal those Nitzotzos of Kedusha. And how do we do so? Well, the answer is Drosh V'Kabel Schar. If you darshan, then it's as if you have created a base hamanuga in reality, which you didn't, but it's as if, the Torah considers it if, and it's as if you did the netzitza, and now you can expose the Kedusha. So we have to learn this parsha and study the laws of base hamanuga in order to facilitate the freeing or the redeeming of the sparks of Kedusha that were hidden by the Amorim in the Kiros Habayis. And again, those hidden treasures are really the Kedusha. Because as we said before, Zahav equals Kedusha in this equation. And how do we do this? Al Yidei Esek HaTorah V'Toras Negoyim. It's going to be considered as if we makayim the mitzvah of Netitzas Beis HaMenuga. And as a result, the Nitzotzos of Kedusha will be revealed and will be replaced. Now I see it's getting a little late, but let's see if we can at least hop around a little bit more on the left column of page 2. And he says the following, that Klal Yisrael has a tremendous connection to the land of Israel. The land of Israel is sanctified above and beyond all other lands, as the Mishnah says in Kehilim. And Klal Yisrael is the most sanctified nation on the face of the earth. So the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, the sanctity of Klal Yisrael, is a natural marriage relationship. And therefore, when it says, Hayisem li kedoshim ki kodesh ani, God says, I separate you from the nations of the world because I endow you with sanctity, we begin to understand why the Amorim, right? Hitminu matmonio shel zav shein nitzotzos kedusha v'kiras batei b'eretz Yisrael. In other words, the kochos atuma guaranteeing that there'll be nitzotzos of kedusha and a lot of nitzotzos of kedusha in Eretz Yisrael that should be hidden, because they don't want the Jewish people to reveal these nitzotzos of kedusha. And therefore, what now we want to see the therefore, which we're going to have to fast forward here to page 4 for a moment, and you'll try to find the time if you can to fill in the middle. He says the following, that there's another entity that has hidden Kedusha to it. And what is that entity? That's the Shabbos. And that's called in the language of Shas, Matana Tova Yeshli V'Beis Kenazai V'Shabbos Shma. That Shabbos is filled with Kedusha. But again, if you look at Shabbos on the outside, you don't see Kedusha. And now that we get to the Shabbos before Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's the 10th of Nisan of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands the people of Israel, which you see on the top left column, Mishchu ukhu lachem tzon, that at this point you have to, in a sense, be willing to sacrifice your life, because who knows what the mitzvah are going to do when they see that you're taking their God and you're going to slaughter it. He says, "Afshad mitzvim hayucholim larogosam." As far as they knew, as they were concerned, the mitzvim could just simply and would naturally kill them. And HaKadosh Baruch wants to show them and expose this pneumius, this inner sanctity of the Jewish people. That the Jewish people, despite all the danger that's involved, they're willing to dedicate themselves to fulfill the mandate of God, the Commander in Chief, and they're willing to take the God of the Mitzrayim. Now, where did they get this power from? Where they have this ability to tap into that inner Kedusha, that inner below surface, in-depth sanctity? The answer is, they got it from Shabbos. Why? Because Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Matana Tov Yesh Li B'Beis Genozai, V'Shabbos Shma, I have this wonderful gift, I have it hidden away, but now I want to reveal it and give it as a gift to Klal Yisrael. That's the Matana Tova. And the Matana Tova is B'Beis Genozai. Where is it hidden? In Beis Genozai, that was the same word that we used to describe the Amorim that were hiding the Nitzotz of Kedusha. And basically, Beis Genozai means that for the meantime, until God grants the people of Israel the gift, the great gift of Shabbos, but before that happens, where is the Shabbos? The Shabbos is Beis Genozai. It is a Nekuda, it's a Pnimius, it's a point that, of Kedusha that is Genuza. Genuza means it's hidden, right? Like we talk about a Geniza. You put something into Geniza, it gets buried. On Shabbos, we have access to those nitzotzes of Kedusha. And that's what happens on the Shabbos. Again, if we implement the Shabbos, if we experience the Shabbos on it in its ideal way, then we're able to tap into these nitzotzes of Kedusha that make up the Shabbos. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands us to take the Korban Pesach dafka on Shabbos, because that's the point in time where we have a gilui, we're able to tap into the inner powers of Klal Yisrael. And now keep in mind that we were 2 centuries in Mitzrayim, and that we reached the Memtes Shari Tuma. So our situation in spiritual terms is very fragile. But nevertheless, we have a Shabbos experience, and that Shabbos experience allows us to tap in to an entire world of feelings, of emotions, of spirituality, of Mesiris Nefesh. And we so to speak, you know, I have here, I put it here just for the purpose of this shiur, to show you what a recharger is all about. This recharger is Shabbos. Shabbos is a recharger. Mm-hmm. You take your spiritual batteries and recharge it. Okay, I didn't put all the batteries in because it's only Thursday. But we're anticipating the Shabbos HaGadol. The Shabbos HaGadol is that Shabbos which gave Klal Yisrael the ability to tap into inner energies so that they, on the Shabbos, could be Moser Nefesh. They could put their lives on the line with a tremendous amount of sanctity to take the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim. And therefore every year, year in and year out, we have a kvius. We set aside a day, which is Shabbos, to commemorate this great miracle of taking the God of the Mitzrayim. And we celebrate that day, Dafkon Shabbos. And who is the first Jew to fight against Avodah Zarah in history? Avraham Avinu. He's the Adam HaGadol Shebat Gadol Shebat Nakev. And on Shabbos, we're able to tap into this energy that would give us the ability of Mesiris Nefesh, to take the idols of the Goyim and destroy them. And this is the Nekuda Pnimis. This is what we want to get to. The whole holiday of Pesach is all geared towards revealing and strengthening the Nekuda Pnimis. That's the Shabbos HaGadol. This is the day in which Avraham Avinu is called the Gadol, in which he realizes that his descendants have this Nekuda Pnimis, which again, in its root, it could be traced back to Avraham Avinu. And that Nekuda Pnimis, despite all the years in Mitzrayim, still is alive and well. It was not blemished, it was not destroyed. And on Shabbos HaGadol, the people of Israel, through the power of Shabbos, are able to tap into those inner powers that they have. And inner powers give them the ability to take the Avodah Zorah of the Mitzrayim and shecht it. And that's what Shabbos HaGadol is all about. Shabbos HaGadol is about the Mesiras Nefesh of a Jew once he gets to the point in which he can tap in to his inner Kedusha, those nitzotzes of Kedusha on Shabbos, because Shabbos has those nitzotzes of Kedusha. The Jew is able to connect and recharge his batteries, and now he's ready to move forward with sanctity, with faith, just like the Jews were able to move forward and take the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim. And this is what Shabbos HaGadol is all about. So the message of Shabbos HaGadol this year in particular is hidden in the Beis HaMenuga, because the Beis HaMenuga, the Mitzorah, which we're going to read about in just 2 days, is the message that don't judge the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael or of a Jew by what you see on the outside. There are kochos pnimiyim, there are Kedusha and nitzotzos of Kedusha that are below the surface. And the message of Beis HaMenuga is that by being dedicated to the study of Torah, we can tap into these elements of Kedusha. We can begin to recognize the Kedusha that exists in the very atmosphere of Eretz Yisrael. And on Shabbos, that's the unique day of the week where we can tap in and reveal those nitzotzos, those secret powers of Kedusha that are hidden below the surface, that give the Jew, if he only opens his heart to tap into that Kedusha, the ability to go all the way, to give and be willing to give the ultimate sacrifice for our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Yiratzon may be his will that we be zoche to tap into the tremendous sanctity that we have in this wonderful opportunity, 2 days' time, of Shabbos HaGadol Parshas Mitzorah, and be able to reach that level of revealing the nitzotzos of Kedusha that within us, within Klal Yisrael, and bring about the day in which we'll have the ultimate Geula at the time of the Gilui of all these nitzotzos of Kedusha, v'meirah v'yameinu. Amen. Thank you so much.